You are listening to a talk given at the Brisbane City Bible Forum. We hope you enjoy the presentation.
Well, I live in Sydney, and there's a news agent near where I live, and it's owned by a Chinese man. This man came from mainland China about 20 years ago. He worked in a factory, but just a few years ago, he quit his factory job and he started running the news agent. And the work is hard. He gets up at 4:30 in the morning. He never sees his teenage son. He works every day of the year except for Christmas Day. But he tells me he enjoys this job better than his factory job. Why? Because he is his own boss. He gets to do what he wants to do. He said, because I am free. And if we are free, then we will be happy. So welcome to our series of talks on happiness, three keys to happiness. The three keys we're looking at are success, freedom, and being true to yourself. And yesterday lunch we looked at success, today we're looking at freedom, and tonight we're going to look at being true to ourselves. What we're going to do is we're going to look at each one of these talks one by one and see what Jesus in the Bible has to say about our topics. And this comes in the form of a 20-minute talk from me now, followed by some question and answer from you guys. And so right now we're going to look at the topic of freedom. Well, what is freedom? Well, freedom is the idea where I, the individual, get to do what I want, I get to think what I want, and I get to believe what I want, because I'm free. I'm free to make choices, free to decide what will make me happy. Now, there's a story in the Bible where there's a man who is rich, he's young, and he's powerful, and he comes to Jesus, and he asks Jesus, what can I do to have eternal life? And Jesus says to this rich, young, powerful man, well, all you have to do is give up everything you have right now, sell everything you have, give it to the poor, come and follow me. And at this, the man becomes very sad because he's very wealthy and he can't do it. And he walks away sad. And Jesus is sad for him as well. And this shocks the disciples and it shocks us, because if the young man can't be free, if the rich man can't be free, if the powerful person can't be free, who can be free? And the disciples say to Jesus, the original followers say, well, who can be free? Who can be saved? And Jesus says, you know what? You're right. With people, it's almost impossible, but God will make it possible. So what is Jesus saying about freedom? That's what we're going to look at now. And there are three parts to my talk. In the first part, we'll look at, well, what is freedom? Middle part, problems with freedom. And in the final part, what Jesus says about how we can be free. So let's begin. What is freedom? This is Paris, France. I did French in high school and I dropped it after only 1 year because I could not do it. I couldn't do the pronunciation. But my wife and I went to Paris and it was amazing. My wife, who had done no French in high school, suddenly she could speak fluent French. And what it was one day we're walking along a pedestrian crossing. And in Brisbane, if you go across a pedestrian crossing, cars stop. But if you go to Paris and you walk across a pedestrian crossing, cars don't stop. And they're so furious at you that you dare even walk on a crossing in front of them. So one car just screeched right in front of us, and he hit his horn, bah! To let us know how angry he was. Oh, that's when my wife got angry, and she lit up. She said to the guy, we are pedestrians! And just like that, she could speak French. All you have to do is get an English word, and you mispronounce it. You moron! You idiot! Imbecile! But everywhere we went in French, we also saw this sign. Liberty, equality, fraternity. Freedom, equality, and the brotherhood and sisterhood of humankind. This was the foundation, the basis of the French Revolution, and it's the foundation of the modern Western world, that we are free, we are equal, and there's a brotherhood and sisterhood of humankind. This is the USA Declaration of Independence, 1776, and it says this in its line, we believe that all people are created equal, and have an inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We have a right to life, to freedom, to choose how we want to be happy. This was the basis for the American Revolution, and it's the foundation of the modern Western world. In Australia, our national anthem goes like this, our very first line, Australians all let us rejoice. What are we so happy about? Because we are young and we are free. It's the first line of our national anthem. It's the foundation of the modern Western world. Now, if you go around the world, you notice every state in the world has a state number plate with a state slogan. So in Queensland, it's a Sunshine State, and that's okay. In New South Wales, it's we're the Premier State, and that's boring. Victoria, we're the Garden State, more boring. But if you go to America, and you go to New Hampshire, this is their state motto. Live free or die. Now that's our motto, freedom. It's that foundation of the modern Western world. And that's why we believe in democracy in the West. We should be free to choose the government we want. We have freedom of speech. We should be free to say whatever we want. And we have freedom of belief. We don't believe what mum and dad tell us to believe. We don't believe what organized religion or traditional authorities tell us to believe. We come to our own belief and we own it because we are free to believe whatever we want. So that's the first thing we learn about freedom. It's the foundation of the modern Western world. And the second thing about freedom is this. It promises us happiness. Freedom promises us happiness. In the Western narrative, it goes like this. When you're a kid, mum and dad tell us what to do, and that sucks. But the magic birthday in the modern Western narrative is 18. Because when you turn 18, you are free. You can make your own decisions. You can buy a beer. You can own a passport and travel where you want. And you can vote for the government you want. You are free. Suddenly you don't have to go to school. You can go to university and you can skip lectures. You can choose what to go to. You don't have to wear a school uniform. Now you're free. You wear whatever you want. And for all the Asians, when you're 18, no more piano lessons. Free, free, free at last. Adam Goods, who was Australian of the Year, he says what he loves about Australia is the freedom. We are free to believe what we want, the freedom. I have friends who were in a closed country for a while, and they lived there for about 4 or 5 years. And they came back to Australia, and they wrote in their email to all their friends, we're back in Australia, and what we're struck by is the freedom. Our children can wear what they want. We can choose what versions of milk we want in the shops. And women can be free to drive in cars, and we can choose our government. We are struck by the freedom that we enjoy in Australia. So that's the first part of the talk. What is freedom? It is the foundation of the modern Western world, and it promises us happiness. And not just happiness for us, the individual, but happiness for our society and country. So what might be some problems with freedom? And here I suggest two things. The first problem with freedom is this. Whatever we live for owns us. We see this in the story of the rich, powerful young man. He's rich, he's free, he's young, but he can't walk away from it. See, we're free to live for whatever we want, but whatever we live for owns us. It becomes our master. We serve it, and we can't walk away. So we're not free at all. When men hit middle age, they hit what's called a midlife crisis. And psychologists describe it as a second adolescence. It's a search for identity, a search for purpose. And a man in his midlife feels trapped by three things. One, his aging body. Two, his family. And three, his finances. And usually a man will hit the stage, a crisis says, I'm trapped, I'm not free. I need to break free and I need to live for myself. And what we'll do is usually one, two, or all three of these three things. Lash out, make an irresponsible purchase, quit his job, or maybe even leave his family. But of course he's not free, he's just become a slave to a new reality. I'll show you my midlife crisis. This is what I bought 2 years ago. This is my gym. Look at it. It promises me freedom. It's only got four seats. And that means when I drive in it, and if I take my three boys, my wife can't come along. She has to catch the train to meet us where we're going. I'm free. And then I can go off-road. I don't have to go on the freeway. I never get booked for speeding because I think, with the roof off, I'm going 110 k's an hour. I look at the speed, I'm only doing 40. You cannot get caught speeding in this thing. And when you arrive, you feel physically assaulted. Your face has been peeled back. It's an all-over body sensation. And we have this boring other car. It's just this station wagon. But after driving the Jeep, when I jump in the other car, whoa, it feels like a Ferrari. Because something's responsive, fast, and low to the ground. So my advice is, if you have midlife crisis, don't buy the Ferrari. Just buy the $10,000 Jeep, and it'll make your other car feel like a Ferrari. This is a tribute to my personal freedom, but I'm not really free. I've just become a slave to a new reality. Now, I pay twice as much for petrol. I have a whole new set of registration and insurance bills. I've become a slave to a new reality. This thing now owns me. In the 1960s, in the modern Western world, we had a revolution. And now we enjoy freedoms our grandparents can only dream about. We have women's equality, we have contraception, and we are free from traditional morals and traditional religions. But commentators point out, with this freedom came something else. It also came with capitalism, consumerism, and unchecked spending. So with our freedoms, we've actually sold our souls. So we want the overseas holiday? Fine. We want the bigger house? Fine. We want the second car? Fine. But now we've had to sell our souls to the bank to get that. So now instead of being free, both partners work. We work 60-hour weeks. And we have 30-year mortgages. We're not free. We're trapped. They say in Australia we have the second most expensive housing in the world. We have a debt-to-income ratio of 180%. So Australians all let us rejoice because we are free. No, we are slaves to our banks. We are slaves to our 30-year mortgages. So we're not free at all. We're free to live for whatever we want, but whatever we live for now owns us, and we're trapped, and we can't walk away. But there's a second problem with freedom, and it's this. Freedom sort of unmasks a darkness in our own hearts. Freedom actually doesn't make us better people. Often it makes us worse people. Now, my wife and I lived in America for about 5 years. This is America. It's the land where hamburgers are the size of a pillow. Doritos are bigger than your two-year-old son. But while we're there, 9/11 also happened. And President Bush said, the terrorists, quote, hate us for our freedoms. And so Bush declared a war on terror. Well, that war on terror, I didn't sense it gave us more freedom. It seemed to take away freedoms. It gave us Guantanamo Bay. It gave us waterboarding. It gave us the Iraq War, where 100,000 Iraqi civilians died in the name of our freedom. So somehow, freedom unmasks an insecurity, a fear, a hatred, where we give up freedoms just to keep freedoms. There's an irony, a paradox here. In the French Revolution, the French Revolution liberated us from the rule of kings, nobles, and traditional authority and the church, but it also gave us what historians call, quote, a new reign of terror. It gave us the guillotine, and 40,000 people were killed without a trial by the guillotine. Somehow freedom unmasked an insecurity, a hatred, a darkness in us, where now we're prepared to give up freedoms so that we don't lose our freedoms. Now on Australia Day, we celebrate our freedom. Now, Australia's an interesting country because we began unfree as a prison colony. We were prisoners. We were literally not free. But, you know, people often ask me, what's the difference between America and Australia? And I say, you've got to understand, this is the difference between America and Australia. America started as an English colony. Australia started as an English prison colony. The Americans had to fight a revolution to break free from the English. The Australians, we did nothing. And the English gave us that freedom because they just didn't want us. We need to be free. And so ever since then, the Americans have this idea, you've got to do something, you've got to be proactive, you've got to fiddle, and that will make things better. Australians, do nothing, and things will get better. Don't touch it. If we fiddle, things will get worse. I see you wrecked it. So whereas Americans say, it's good you had a go, we're thinking, what did you do that for? And so the Americans, you know, they put a man on the moon. We'll be saying, what are you putting a man on the moon for? Leave it alone. It's never given us any trouble. So somehow we become free. And that's what we celebrate in Australia Day. We are free. But in the last few years, Australia Day has amassed, well, there's an ugly side to Australia Day. In Sydney, people run through the beaches draped in Australian flags. And just a few years ago at Manly Beach, they were chanting, if you're Aussie and you know it, clap your hands. And it soon changed to, if you're white and you know it, clap your hands. So somehow in our hearts there's a lot of fear, insecurity and darkness. So even though we've been set free from the chains of England, we're not free from the darkness that's inside our hearts. So we're slaves to our fears and insecurities. And deep down, if we admit it, we're not happy with who we are. We have secrets, we have darkness, we have shame. So how can we really be free? And somehow by being free, we don't end up being better people. Often more freedom makes us worse people. So how can we be free? Well, let's go back to what Jesus says about freedom. He says to the man, first of all, leave everything you have and follow me. And what Jesus is saying is this, whatever we're living for, stop living for that and live for Jesus instead. Because whatever we're living for isn't setting us free, it's owning us and it's destroying us. Instead, live for Jesus instead. A few years ago, I did a canyoning trip, and in a canyoning trip, we abseiled down 10 waterfalls, so we went down, 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 and then we had to climb back up, 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 up out of the gorge. And then we had to drive home that night. So after a 16-hour canyon trip, we had to drive home around midnight. And there was about 5 of us. So I thought, okay, we're tired. Chances are we might fall asleep. So let's have a nice little system. How about we take turns driving? So we had a little system that one person would drive, everyone else would sleep in the car, and you just did these 10, 20-minute shifts at the wheel. And I remember when it was my turn to drive, everyone was asleep in the car, and I was so tired. But I did my little 10-minute, 20-minute, shift, and when it was over, I remember indicating, pulling over, parking the car. I got out, I woke up the person in the back seat. We switched, he started driving, and I went in the back seat, and I started sleeping. I go, oh, sleep is so sweet. I started sleeping, and then I woke up. I found I was still at the wheel. I had dreamed the whole sequence. So that's how dangerous that was. And that's basically what Jesus is saying. Whoever's driving our life right now, stop having that person drive your life. They will destroy you. They will kill you. Switch drivers. Have Jesus drive our life. Follow Jesus and live for him instead. See, what are we living for will destroy us. If we're living for success, there's always another mountain to climb. If we're living for money, but there's always more money to make. If we're living for reputation, there'll always be whispers behind our back that we can't silence. If we're living for the perfect family, we can never make ourselves a perfect father or mum or a husband or wife or the perfect child to our parents. And if we're living for ourselves, well, that's just going to end in loneliness. Live for Jesus instead. Timothy Keller from America puts it this way. Whatever we're living for won't fulfill us when we find it and won't forgive us when we fail it. But if we live for Jesus and we find him, he'll fulfill us. And if we fail him, he will forgive us. So in Jesus, we have freedom. And we all have to live for something. When we don't live for something, we've got nothing to live for. But whatever we live for owns us. Jesus says, live for me and he will set us free. And the second thing Jesus offers us is this, a miracle. Remember his followers said, if the young man, the rich man, the powerful man can't be saved, who can be saved? And Jesus says, you're right. It's impossible, but God makes it possible because God gives us a new heart. Our original hearts are trapped in darkness and secrecy and shame and insecurity and fear and hatred. Jesus puts his spirit in our heart and he sets us free by giving us perfect love. Because he loves us perfectly just the way we are, we can be free to love. And because he loves us too much to leave us the way we are, he slowly removes the darkness, the shame, the fear, the insecurity, the hatred that's in us and sets us free. One way of understanding is this. I have three little boys, 8, 6, and 4, so I often go to parenting seminars, and they say, you know what? Often parents think to make their kids happy is to take away boundaries. But actually, kids thrive on boundaries. They need clear, consistent boundaries. And what makes kids happy are three things. Boundaries, knowing that they're loved by their parents, and knowing that they're safe. They just need those three ingredients. And that's what Jesus offers us, boundaries. We follow him. He gives us appropriate, clear boundaries. We live like his way. And he loves us perfectly just the way we are. So we know we are safe. And that lets us thrive and be free and just be who we are. So the original question was this. How can I be free? And I said the irony of freedom is this. By being free, often we're owned by what we live for. And freedom often makes us worse people than better people. But Jesus gives us freedom because we can live for him and we have his love and security. I'll just end with this story. As you know, that's Janice Joplin, but I'll skip that. Andrew Chan, who was one of the Bali Nine, was prisoned in Indonesia, killed last year by a firing squad. A few years ago, when he was in solitary confinement, he heard the words from Jesus in the Bible, and he believed in Jesus, and he followed Jesus. And before his court case, Andrew Chan, in an interview, said he prayed this. God, if you're real, and God, if this is true, and God, if you want to free me, and if you do, I'll serve you every day for the rest of my life. So I went to my court hearing, but they convicted me, and they gave me the death penalty. So I went back to my cell and said, God, I asked you to set me free, not kill me. And God spoke to me and said, Andrew, I have set you free from inside out, and I have given you life. And from that moment on, I haven't stopped worshiping him. I've never sung before, never led worship, but now Jesus has set me free. So you and I want to be free, but whatever we're living for won't set us free. It's actually trapping us, and it's exposing the darkness in our hearts. So how can we be free? We'll live for Jesus, be loved by Jesus, and let Jesus change us from the inside out. There you are. Oh, you white people look the same.
So we've got an opportunity now. It's just past 1 o'clock, so we've got a few minutes. If you want to send, that's my number. So if you want to send a text or a question or a comment, or you can just ask it from the floor if you're feeling brave. All right, we're done.
Yeah. So there are inappropriate rules and there are appropriate rules. And so when we go to watch a movie, they give us some rules. They say, don't talk to the person next to you and turn off your mobile phones. And those rules, rather than being oppressive, actually set us free to enjoy the movie. And I think that's what the rules from God are. They're actually appropriate rules that set us free to enjoy life the way God's designed it. Another way of explaining it is that often we think, well, the Bible actually presents God to us as the party God. The very first command given to us in the Bible is to have sex, and a lot of sex, because somehow two people have to fill the world, so that's a lot of sex, all right? And then the very first miracle from Jesus when he comes along is he turns water into wine, not just any wine, but good wine. When they're already drunk and they can't taste the difference between good wine and bad wine, and they've already had enough, he gives them even too much wine, so too much good wine. So this sex and wine, so this is the party God. And the complaint about Jesus when he was on earth was he ate too much and drank too much and wasn't appropriately serious. Like, why aren't you serious? And he said, because the Son of God is here. We need to party. So we have this idea that God doesn't want us to enjoy life. He does want us to enjoy life. But if we do it on his terms, we actually enjoy it properly and fully in a way that flourishes and fulfills us. Whereas if we don't follow the rules, it's actually a way that destroys us.
Well, I get the
Yeah, how do you know? So we all live with God, but there are different ways of expressing living with God. So the way I'm saying Christianity is this: God loves us just the way we are, so we're totally secure, so we don't have to live in a way that earns God's love. He loves us the way we are, but he loves us too much to leave us the way we are. So he slowly changes us, and we have different ways of expressing that. And I think the different ways come down to, well, what is our gifting and personality? What is our attitude? And what do my circumstances allow? So we all have different circumstances. So what's interesting is I have three boys, and they have three completely different personalities. And someone jokes, and they come from the same conveyor belt, but somehow we have three different human beings. And same with us, in this room, if we all follow Jesus, we'll all have different ways of expressing that. But that's because God makes us different. So I think I can't answer that in a general sense, but it comes down to we are different, so that's something we can embrace. And it comes down to God has gifted us differently. We have different personalities and attitudes. And also circumstances. So there's some environments that will allow me to behave one way, but not another way.
I know you said you lived in America, considering that in Brown, no one as a sports-loving nation, do you think where it's slave, when more of a slave to sport is the best? Do we worship?
Do we worship sport? Well, I guess it's what it represents in your heart. So we have the same action, but our hearts have different motivations. So what is motivating us? Some healthy motivations for sport are, it's a healthy outlet for tribalism, because we have collective identities, and often in our society we've lost our collective identity. So that's a healthy outlet for our tribalism. But if it becomes more than that, then it could be a problem. I remember reading Hugh Mackay, he's a social commentator. He said things like leisure and sports are meant to just give us a little relief valve from our normal routines, but if they become our normal routine, then there's a problem.
I think there's a different kind of life when we agree to the concepts of sin like darkness and so forth. Do we use this sort of nursery in our context? Or?
What if we lived a broken or different life?
Different kind of life when we agree to the concepts of sin. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so maybe one way of understanding is we all sin in our different ways. We've all shamed and dishonored God in our different ways. What can we expect? So we have a story of King David in the Bible, who committed a horrible sin. He murdered a man just so he could get a man's wife and make his wife his wife. And then what we know is, what he did was wrong, so it doesn't help say it wasn't wrong. There, David, boys will be boys. No, it is wrong. It goes against God's wish and design, so it is wrong. We've got to call it wrong, call it what it is. But at the same time, God forgives, so David calls out, God, can you just help me start again? Give me a new heart, what we read about. So God will forgive anything we've done. There's no unforgivable sin. But at the same time, there will be consequences for what happens. So he reaps the reward, like in that his family ends up quite broken and dysfunctional because of what he did, because of his affair. But at the same time, the Bible says God somehow redeems and makes good come out of any broken situation. So from what David did, we end up finding out that one day Jesus will come from that broken line. So again, the sequence, what we do is wrong. It doesn't help to say, hey, that was okay. But at the same time, there's always forgiveness and a fresh start. But at the same time, there will be consequences for what has happened. So we have to work our way through that, through reconciliation, through counselling, through some sort of help. And at the same time, God will somehow find a way to redeem and bring good out of any broken situation.
Thanks, Sam. I think that's all we've got time for.